Good afternoon, everyone. Apparently, they're giving emojis a thumbs down. Gen Xers and baby boomers apparently understand the meanings behind these digital icons, but they're not confident in their ability to use them. At least that's according to a new study from the University of Ottawa. In the headlines on the update this Tuesday, the mayor of this city, Eric Adams, has been accused in a new lawsuit of sexually assaulting a police colleague seeking his career help back in 1993. We'll have the latest details. The state of New York is going to evaluate its troubled recreational marijuana licensing program, as the lawsuits and bureaucratic stumbles have severely hampered the legal market and the black market sellers have flourished. You may remember last year that team from New Jersey, Fairleigh Dickinson, played their way out of the first four and became one of the most improbable bracket busters in NCAA tournament history. Eight teams begin their tournament journey tonight and tomorrow, hoping to become the first team and the next team to start in Dayton and do some bracket busting. And in Washington, the Supreme Court, they seem likely to side with the Biden administration in a dispute with Republican-led states over how far the federal government can go to combat controversial social media posts on topics including COVID and election security. This is the update, a Tuesday, March the 19th, 2024. Every city has a story, and in New York City, there just happens to be a lot of them. From the Tommy Lynn stage, this is the update with Brandon Julian. A three-time winner of the Kingsborough Community College Gold Student Service Award. It's everything that you need to know. Because anything can happen in New York. Greetings and salutations to you all, folks, every last one of you. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the update on a Tuesday that it's the final official day, at least according to the calendar, of the winter of 2024. 23, actually. Saying 24 because it's, you know, this year, 2024. This winter will go down, of course, as the first measurable snowfall that we've had in quite some time. A snow day even declared in the New York City metro area, even though, as we all knew, it didn't really turn out that way. And also the digital learning, it failed as well. So that's something to remember. But yes, spring rolls in later on tonight. I forget the exact time. I know it's after 10 o'clock that spring will officially roll in. And even though it will transition into spring, it's still not going to feel like spring. Not for a couple of days, at least. The winds that were pretty tame the other day will get progressively gustier as the week goes along. And we have more rain coming Friday night through Saturday night. That's just what we need, another rainstorm on a Saturday. You remember, I think it was last year, we had how many weekends in a row, or how many Saturdays where we didn't see the sunshine, or it just kept raining? Woo! Yay! I'm Brandon Julian, of course, folks. We appreciate you so much for being here, wherever you may be, and however, of course, personally, that you may be listening to us. Lots of news, of course, to catch you up on. We're going to begin this Tuesday's proceedings with some shocking accusations against the mayor of this town, Eric Adams. He's been accused in a new lawsuit of sexually assaulting a police colleague that was seeking his career help back in 1993. According to the suit, Adam drove the woman to a vacant lot and then you offered to use his police connections to help her if she performed oral sex on him. The lawsuit says that she refused, but then he exposed himself. The mayor denies the allegations and said he does not ever remember meeting this said accuser. An attorney for the city said that they are reviewing this lawsuit and described the allegations as, quote, outrageous. Now, on to some of the other news of this Tuesday. And to Long Island we go, out of Mineola, where the Olympic gold medalist Caitlyn Jenner has now thrown her support behind Bruce Blakeman, that Nassau County executive, with that order that bans female sports teams with transgender athletes from using county-owned facilities. The reality TV star, of course, came out as a transgender woman back in 2015. She argued that transgender athletes would undermine female athletes' achievements under Title IX, a law banning sex discrimination in programs that receive federal funds. Jenner made the comments out alongside the Nassau County executive. Down I-95 we go now to Atlantic City, a very popular destination spot for spring break, which is coming up in a matter of weeks. But apparently, there's a little too much Atlantic in Atlantic City this year for some of the casinos. You may remember all those weeks of winter storms that we had washed away much of the sand from the gambling resorts' North End beaches. And that's left the Ocean Resorts and Hard Rock casinos urgently trying to get federal officials to accelerate a sand replenishment project planned for some time this year. Atlantic City has long said that its beaches set it apart from the gambling attractions elsewhere in this country. But without the beaches, it could be a harder sell attracting tourists and even gamblers. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says that the beach repair work might not start until later this summer or even into the fall. The good people at Sports Illustrated, they're going to continue their operations after the company that owns the brand agreed with a new publisher for its print and digital products. Minute Media took over yesterday after reaching a licensing agreement with the Authentic Brands Group. Back in January, Authentic announced that it was revoking the Arena Group's publishing license after Arena failed to make a quarterly payment. Authentic had been in negotiations with Arena, Minute Media, and other publishing entities over the last 2 months. Authentic will acquire an equity stake in Minute Media, which also publishes the online sites The Players Tribune, A Fansided, and 90 Min. Other terms, including the length of this deal, were not announced. To the state capitol in Albany we go now. And talking about the legal marijuana system that this state has, and if you've been out on the streets, you know that it hasn't exactly been working as the state would have liked it to. As a matter of fact, the state is going to be evaluating its troubled licensing program, as the lawsuits and bureaucratic stumbles have severely hampered the legal market, and the black market sellers have flourished. Governor Hochul ordered the review yesterday, eager to find ways to speed up license processing times and allow legal businesses to open faster. She's even described the state's rollout of recreational marijuana, quote, as a disaster. Just over 80 legal shops have opened since sales began at the end of 2022, while unlicensed storefronts have popped up statewide. And the review calls for embedding the state government officials in the Cannabis Management Agency for at least 30 days. Back here in the city limits, The Biden administration, they've now sided with a promoter who filed an antitrust suit against FIFA and the U.S. Soccer Federation over the world's governing body's policy against hosting league matches from other countries, urging the Supreme Court of this country to allow the case to proceed to trial. The government says the Supreme Court should allow a 2023 second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision to stand. Relevant Sports, controlled by Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross, was refused permission to host a Spanish league match between Barcelona and Girona at Miami Gardens in Florida back in January of 2019. The soprano Kathleen Battle is returning to the Met at the age of 75 for a recital on May 12th. It's only her second appearance, I should say, there, since the company fired her back in 1994 and publicly accused her of what it called, quote, unprofessional actions. Battle will be accompanied by harpist Bridget Kibbe and guitarist Chico Pinheiro. The Mets' GM, Joseph Volpe, in February of 94, announced then that the company had terminated Battle's contract for a Donizetti opera over verbal confrontation. She last returned back in 2016 to give a recital on invitation by Volpe's successor. The lawyer for one person named R. Kelly says now that all kinds of legitimate organizations, even college fraternities, could be deemed racketeering organizations under a law used to convict the R&B superstar at his trial of using his fame to sexually abuse young fans. Attorney Jennifer Bongean tried to persuade three judges on the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals today that prosecutors improperly use a racketeering statute written to shut down organized crime to go after the singer. The judges, who did not immediately rule in this case, but they had plenty of questions for Bongean and a prosecutor who defended the government's handling of this case, which resulted in a 30-year prison sentence for Kelly. A conservative social media influencer has now been charged with storming the Capitol and passing a stolen table out of a broken window, allowing other rioters to use it as a weapon against the police. Court records that were unsealed yesterday show that Isabella Maria De Luca is charged with misdemeanors, including theft of government property, disorderly conduct, and entering a restricted area. She was arrested last Friday in Irvine, California. De Luca has more than 333,000 followers on the platform, formerly known as Twitter. She's a former congressional intern who works as a media associate for the Gold Institute for International Strategy. Meanwhile, we've all seen that Access Hollywood tape with the former president and Billy Bush bragging about grabbing women sexually without asking for permission. Well, that infamous tape is not going to be shown to the jurors at his hush money criminal trial. Judge Juan Merchan ruled yesterday that prosecutors can still question the witnesses about the 2005 tape, which was made public in the final weeks of Trump's 2016 White House campaign. But the judge said, quote, it is not necessary that the tape itself be introduced into evidence or that it be played for the jury. Merchan issued rulings on the Access Hollywood tape and other issues even after deciding last week to postpone the trial until at least mid-April. In other news, we're going to go back over the Hudson and go to Trenton in Jersey, where their one-of-a-kind method of drawing primary ballots has prompted some apparent skepticism from a federal judge. The judge held a hearing yesterday as he considers a lawsuit, claiming that the system favors preferred candidates of the establishment party leaders and gives them a more prominent position on the primary ballot. The lawsuit was filed by Democratic Representative Andy Kim and others seeking to stop the state's so-called county line system of primary ballot design. It's unclear when the judge will rule in this case, but the outcome of the lawsuit could determine whether that ballot design is carried into a contentious Senate primary in June, pitting Kim against the First Lady of the state, Tammy Murphy. And finally, a Chinese billionaire has now pleaded guilty to federal election crimes, admitting that he made thousands of dollars in contributions to New York and Rhode Island political candidates in the name of others. Hui Guin is a Chinese cinema magnate and pleaded guilty yesterday. He faces up to 27 years in prison on the charges that include orchestrating a straw donor scheme and immigration fraud. Prosecutors say that he sought to send more than $10,000 in donations, concealed in the names of others, to a candidate for citywide office here in New York, as well as congressional candidates in New York and in Rhode Island. His attorney did not respond to a request for comment. Time for us to step aside momentarily. When we return on the update this Tuesday, we have a few important messages to tell you from the MTA. Gonna talk some sports and how the bracket busting potentially could begin. 8 teams are beginning their NCAA tournament journey, hoping to be the next team to start in Dayton and do some bracket busting. We're going to talk together, of course, the latest national news. In Washington, the Supreme Court, they seem likely to side with the Biden administration in a dispute with the Republican-led states over how far the federal government can go to combat controversial social media posts on the topics that include COVID and election security. And at the end of the broadcast today, these people are apparently giving emojis a thumbs down. Gen Xers and baby boomers understand the meanings behind the digital icons, but they're not confident in their ability to use them. At least that's according to a new study from the University of Ottawa. So on this Tuesday, where it's the last full day of winter, even though we're going to transition into spring, and it won't feel like spring, at least for a little while, we're going to talk about all this and a lot more too, of course, folks, when the update with Brain and Julian returns in just a moment. Brandon Julian. You know, it's a big holiday tradition, you know, it's fruitcake. I love all the holiday traditions, as Jim Gaffigan once said. You know, like the Christmas tree. My birthday's right next to Christmas. Christmas tree, you know, we go chop a tree, we go put it in our living room. Sometimes I think that's the creation of a drunk man, really. Some woman wakes up, honey, why is there a pine tree in our living room? I like it. We're gonna decorate it for Jesus. And then I'm gonna hang my socks over the fireplace. Fill them with candy. Maybe I can tie some leaves to a ceiling, see if I can get some action. And now I'm gonna puke on this couch. Merry Christmas. This is the update with Brandon Julian, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Brandon Julian. You know, Valentine's Day coming up, we surprise the ones we love with those big red hearts, you know, filled with the gamble chocolate. Think about it. Has anybody ever eaten any chocolate of those with any confidence? You're like, oh, this is either going to be really good or horribly nasty. Guess I'm just big enough to find out. Oh, I got the one filled with toothpaste. Gonna take another 9 of those to get rid of that flavor. You know, there's a big red heart filled with a gamble chocolate, otherwise there's the tiny heart-shaped antacids. I know I make you nauseous. Here's a Tums with Hug Me written on it. You know, maybe that'll help. This is the update with Brandon Julian. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Keeping an eye on the roads, the rails, and the skies. It's time for Traffic and Weather Together.
Through the first half of 2024, F trains will run on the E line at all times in both directions. Between Rockefeller Center and Jackson Heights Roosevelt Avenue because of track replacement along the 63rd Street line. On weekdays, M trains will not run between Rockefeller Center and Forest Hill 71st Avenue. Trains will run between 57th Street on the F line and Metropolitan Avenue. A special F shuttle train will run every 20 minutes between Lexington Avenue, 63rd Street, and 21st Street, Queensbridge, stopping at Roosevelt Island. The shuttle train will not run overnight. Free shuttle buses will run between 21st Street, Queensbridge, and Queens Plaza on days and evenings, and between Roosevelt Island, 21st Street, Queensbridge, and Queens Plaza overnight. Through early 2024, Manhattan-bound 7 trains are skipping 111th Street and 82nd Street, Jackson Heights, because of station improvements. For nearby service, use a Flushing-bound 7 train or use the Q32 or Q48 buses on days and evenings along Roosevelt Avenue. Through the summer of 2024, Manhattan-bound J and Z trains are skipping 75th Street, Eldridge Lane, and Woodhaven Boulevard because of station improvements. For nearby service, use the Q56 bus making stops along Jamaica Avenue. The New York City Police Department would like to remind you to keep your belongings in sight and to stay aware of your surroundings. If you see something suspicious in the station or on the train, tell a police officer or an MTA employee. MTA crews are here to help us get around. Let's treat them with respect. Assaulting a New York City Transit employee is a felony, punishable by up to 7 years in prison. The fare on local, limited, and select bus service is $2.90, with the exception of the BX18A, BX18B, B60, M116, Q4, Q4 Limited, S46, and S96 Limited, until March 30th. Transfers on all other lines must be requested upon payment of the cash fare. For the S79 Select Bus Service, pay your fare on board the bus. For all other Select Bus Service routes, pay at the kiosk outside and hold your ticket for the duration of your trip. The fare on express buses is $7. Coins are not accepted as a payment on express buses.
Now, with the latest scores and highlights, it's time for the sports update.
So, lots of people out there are doing their NCAA brackets. I haven't done it because I remember what happened last year when millions of people just started just screaming fuck at the TV for the reasons I'm about to get into. Because you may remember last year, the people who had their brackets busted might not want to hear it. But last year, that New Jersey team, Fairleigh Dickinson, they played their way out of the first four and became one of the most improbable bracket busters in NCAA tournament history. That next weekend, they upset Purdue, only the second time in history that a number 16 seed beat a 1. Now, 8 teams begin their journey today and tomorrow night, hoping to be the next team to start in Dayton and do some bracket busting. Wagner, they face Howard later on tonight, followed by Colorado State against Virginia. And tomorrow, Grambling plays Montana State, and Colorado draws Boise State. From college, let's go up to the pros. Knicks were taking on the Warriors. Well, on their road trip, they're passing by San Francisco and Warrior Country. Knicks guard OG Anunoby left the team after his surgically repaired right elbow started flaring up. Excuse me. Coach Tom Thibodeau said that Anunoby flew home after playing 33 minutes in a win at Sacramento on Saturday night in his third game back following surgery. Thibodeau said an MRI came back clean and that Anunoby is day-to-day. He's unlikely to rejoin the team for the final game of their four-game trip Thursday in Denver against the Nuggets. From the hardwood, let's go out to the diamond. Spring training continuing. The opening day of baseball is just about 9 days away on the 28th. And with that, the good people out there, they're continuing their previews of this coming season. In the NL East, the Braves and Ronald Acuna Jr. are ready for another crack at those fighting Phils. And they won't need to wait very long either. The reigning NL MVP and his Braves teammates begin their season right back at Citizens Bank Park, where their season ended with a painful NLDS, just like the year before, too. But the Braves, with 6 straight NL East titles and a World Series crown in 2021, they are the class of the division. But the Phillies have just owned them in October, reaching the past 2 NLCSs at the Braves' expense. The recent power struggle between the teams has produced a budding rivalry atop the AL East. And meanwhile, on the AL East side of things, Longtime baseball fans know about when, like, the Yankees and the Red Sox, where it used to be battling it out for the division, seemingly all the time. Well, it certainly has changed in the last several years. The Rays, they've been a formidable operation for quite a while now. And then the Orioles seemingly kept a swift rise from the ashes of the AL East, so the basement, to build from the depths of their rebuild, too, where they won 101 games and a division title last year. And the Orioles' wealth of young, cost-controlled talent should make them a threat for years to come. But the Yankees, they didn't make that offseason splash when they acquired three-time All-Star Juan Soto. And hey, speaking of those Yanks, down in Tampa, Aaron Judge was expected to play in tomorrow night's exhibition against the Pirates after an 8-day layoff caused by an abdominal injury, while leadoff hitter DJ LeMahieu's status for opening day is now unclear because of a hurt foot. Judge hasn't taken batting practice in the infield or played since March 10th. He has hit off a tee, did some soft toss, and taken batting practice against the pitching machine in the indoor cage. LeMahieu fouled a ball off his right foot on Saturday, but a CT scan found no break. That's good news for them. Like I said before, Supreme Court, they're likely to side with the president in a dispute with some Republican-led states over controversial social media posts and how far the federal government can go to combat it. Hannah Gutierrez Reed, that movie set armor, is challenging her involuntary manslaughter conviction on that set of Rust. And a second man has been charged in connection with the 2005 theft of a pair of ruby slippers that Judy Garland wore in The Wizard of Oz. Gonna talk about this and more because national news, it's next for us around here, of course, when the update of Brandon Julian continues. But first, ladies and gentlemen, we do have to inform you about the following. Where has the time gone? I really hope that I didn't write that line. Did I write that line? Well, maybe I actually did. We're now celebrating 7 years of this program. 7 long news-filled years. My producers, who look for any excuse to hold a celebration, are having one every weekend as we go into the update archives to play you an episode from throughout the many years of this program. And then on the weekends, also once a month, we'll play an episode from my list of personal favorites throughout the many years of this program, as I explain to you why that particular episode is one of my favorites. So every weekend, dig into the update archives with us to remember where you were when this particular episode aired. And then once a month, the list of my favorite episodes as well. Keep listening on the weekends because it'll be a party that you will never forget. Unless, of course, you can't actually remember it from, well, you know, the night before. You know, as I was growing up, my mother told me to always wipe my feet on the mat before I go into the studio. Well, Mom, this one's for you. There's a lot more show to stick around and listen to as the update of Brandon Julian. We'll be right back after these messages. From New York, home of your NCAA men's champion UConn Huskies, this is the update with Brandon Julian, available wherever you're listening to podcasts.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Can I touch this? Where does sand come from? Is this tree good for climbing? What happens if I mix these two things together? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Storing your guns securely is the best way to prevent family fire, including unintentional shootings. For more information on safe gun storage and ways to keep your family safe, visit endfamilyfire.org. That's endfamilyfire.org.
What do we keep in the attic? What's this thing called? Can I ride my bike backwards?
Like I said, kids are curious. It's up to us to keep them safe. Brought to you by End Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Brandon Julian. You know, folks, if you really do think about it, in this day and age, it's a good thing that we can't report people that we don't like to 911 or the police. Could you imagine how that call would go? You know, it'd be like, 911, what's your emergency? Yeah, that lady Carol is at the barbecue again. This is the update with Brandon Julian, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back into the update, Brandon Julian, on a Tuesday, everyone. The final official day of the winter of 2023-24. It really is unbelievable, isn't it? The winter, like I said at the very beginning of the program, will go down as memorable for lots of reasons, but many people are just wanting it to be springtime and the days to get warmer leading up to summer. I get to bring the summer jokes back. That's going to be a lot of fun. But, of course, it will not feel like spring, at least for a little while longer with the gusty winds and more rain Saturday, because that's just what we need, is more rain. Thank you so much, of course, folks, for still being here with us. You know, let us talk together right now, of course, the latest national news. And we are going to begin, of course, in Washington, where the Supreme Court may seem likely to side with the Biden administration in a dispute with Republican-led states over how far the federal government can go to combat controversial social media posts on topics including COVID and election security. The justices, they seemed broadly skeptical yesterday during nearly 2 hours of arguments that a lawyer for Louisiana, Missouri, and other parties presented, accusing officials in the Democratic administration of leaning on the social media platforms to unconstitutionally squelch the conservative points of view. Lower courts have sided with the states, but the Supreme Court blocked those rulings while they consider the issue. The court's decision in this and other social media cases could set standards for free speech in the digital age. In other news, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he's now agreed to send a team of Israeli officials to Washington to discuss with the Biden administration and their officials a prospective Rafah operation, according to White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. Sullivan says that each party is, quote, making clear to the other its perspective. The White House has been skeptical of Netanyahu's plan to carry out an operation in the southern city of Rafah, where about 1.5 million displaced Palestinians are sheltering as Israel looks to eliminate Hamas following its deadly attack back in October. Biden and Netanyahu spoke yesterday for the first time in more than a month. The Supreme Court, they've now extended their block, at least for now, on a Texas law that will give police broader powers to arrest migrants suspected of illegally entering this country, while the legal battle it sparked over immigration authority continues to play out. Opponents have called a law known as Senate Bill 4, the most dramatic attempt by a state to police immigration since an Arizona law more than a decade ago, portions of which were later struck down by the Supreme Court. The Texas Attorney General has said that the state's law mirrored federal law and, quote, was adopted to address the ongoing crisis at the southern border, which hurts Texans more than anyone else. Out to the American West we go now, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where Hannah Gutierrez Reed, the movie set armorer, is now challenging her involuntary manslaughter conviction in the fatal shooting of the cinematographer Hylena Hutchins by Alec Baldwin on the set of the Western film Rust. In court records released yesterday, defense attorneys for Reed requested a new trial and urged the judge to release the defendant from jail as the deliberations proceed. Gutierrez Reed, of course, was convicted earlier this month by a jury in the shooting on the outskirts of Santa Fe during a rehearsal in October of 2021. Baldwin has pleaded not guilty himself to an involuntary manslaughter charge, with his trial being set for July. Back east in Hanover, New Hampshire, Dartmouth, they now say that it will not enter into collective bargaining with the union that its men's basketball players had voted to join earlier this month. The school made the announcement yesterday in a move that could send the case to federal court. The school was adamant that it believes, quote, athletes in the Ivy League are not employees, in a statement that declared its refusal to bargain a labor deal with the athletes. A regional director of the National Labor Relations Board ruled last month that Dartmouth basketball players were employees, clearing the way for them to vote to join the union. And finally, we're going to go up to T-Paul in Minnesota, where a second man there has now been charged in connection with the 2005 theft of a pair of ruby slippers that Judy Garland, of course, wore in The Wizard of Oz, according to an indictment that was made public yesterday, on Sunday, actually. 76-year-old Jerry Hal Saliteman was charged with theft of major artwork and witness tampering. He made his first court appearance on Friday. He did not enter a plea, but his attorney told reporters that his client is not guilty. The indictment says that from 2005 to 2018, Sal Lederman knowingly received, concealed, and disposed of the slippers. Another man has already pleaded guilty to stealing them from the Judy Garland Museum in the late actor's hometown of Grand Rapids, Minnesota. That man, Terry John Martin, was sentenced to time served due to his poor health. Out of all the people that you might know, Gen Xers and Baby Boomers, they apparently understand the meanings of digital icons and emojis, but they're not confident in their ability to use them. At least that's what a new study from the University of Ottawa has found. Gonna talk about this, folks, because your honorable mention is next when the update Brandon Julian continues.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough, but if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. encourage them to see a doctor, or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
From New York, only a rental and only $5 a day. This is the update with Brandon Julian, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back to the update, Brandon Julian, on a Tuesday, everyone. The last day of the winter of the season, 2023-2024. Spring arriving at 11:05 tonight. So, you know, what was your fondest memory of the winter? I'm curious to know about it. By the way, I completely forgot to mention, I'm not sure if you saw part two of the Quiet on Set, the Dark Side of Kids TV. That Drake Bell portion of it was the most compelling thing I've heard in quite a long time. It's the first time you've ever talked about these allegations publicly. So, you know, if you haven't watched it, you need to go find it on Max or wherever ID is streaming at, and you need to take a listen to it for yourself. In any event, folks, we have just enough time left today, of course, for your honorable mention. Let's face it, folks, everybody these days uses emojis for various reasons. Most people do their talking in emojis. As a matter of fact, when we publish these episodes and I'm putting in the description of what this program will be about, when you actually do listen to it, I sometimes use emojis to, you know, help come across various things that we talk about. And it seems like there's an emoji for everything. Unless, you know, if you're an iOS user, which I'm not. I will be an Android user, I most likely think, until the day that I die. And you know what? I'm quite perfectly fine with that. However, there are many people who are giving emojis a thumbs down. According to a new study from the University of Ottawa, Gen Xers and baby boomers, they understand the meanings behind these digital icons, but they're not confident in their ability to use them. The study's lead author, Isabel Boutet, said in a statement, quote, "We found that older users are less likely to use emojis, use fewer emojis, and feel less comfortable in their ability to interpret emojis." The research, which is being called the first, quote, "comprehensive investigation into intergenerational emoji use, including adults over 60, was published this month in the journal Computers in Human Behavior Reports. The study noted that the emoji movement gained steam in this country back in 2011 when Apple added an official emoji keyboard to iOS. 700 million emojis are used daily. Excuse me, try that again. 700 million emojis are used daily on Facebook, and half the comments on Instagram now feature an emoji, according to the statistics. The Ottawa team in particular, they focused on 8 emojis in particular. 3 of them centered on happiness, 2 on sadness, 2 on surprise, and 1 on anger. 240 adults between the ages of 18 and 80 were shown each emoji in a random order. And the participants, they then rated the intensity with which the emoji conveyed each emotion. The researchers, they analyzed the frequency, diversity, the ease of interpretation, and interpretation accuracy to understand how age influences emoji use. The study revealed also that the most difficult emoji for older adults to interpret was the surprised wide-eye emoji, which, and I can't believe they actually put a description of it. I feel like I'm one of those people in a how-to video. Now, you see, for those people who don't know what a surprise emoji is, it's a yellow, blushing face looking speechless with his eyes wide open and eyebrows raised. Which, ironically, was the same face I made in the commercial that I saw on TV a little bit ago when the Pillsbury Doughboy actually had lines. Because what the fuck is that? To my knowledge, the Pillsbury Dough person has never had lines. What the hell is that? More shockingly, though, the second most difficult category was happiness. You know, the grinning face with smiling eyes, and smiling face with smiling eyes were included. Boutet, who was also, by the way, an associate professor in the School of Psychology, said, quote, "This pattern of results leads us to conclude that older users have the motivation and ability to utilize emojis, but they lack the confidence and general technology expertise needed to adapt to this mode of communication. The team believes that it is important to promote the use of emojis for older adults because of their ability to facilitate intergenerational interactions. The hope is that emojis reduce loneliness and help users of all ages fulfill their social and emotional goals." Boutet goes on to say that, quote, "software developers could consider modifying existing emoji menus to facilitate their use across generations by, for example, using unambiguous emojis which older users are able to interpret more easily. Training intervention should also be incorporated into existing community-based programs to help older users to incorporate emojis in their online interactions." This is not the first scholarly study on emoji usage, by the way. Just last month, research that was published in the International Journal of Hospitality Management found customers tip more when servers and restaurants include emojis with tip suggestions on their receipts. The more you know, and if it helps people, then, I'm all for it. Because let's face it, all of us are going to use emojis, practically, till the day we die at this point. I will let you guys ponder on this, as we say, in the words of Walter Cronkite, that's the way it is. Tuesday, March the 19th, 2024. That is the update on this Tuesday. I'm Brandon Joy, and we appreciate you being here with us. In the next episode of my list of personal favorites, we reach a critical moment in the Donald Trump presidency when he broke out of the Iran nuclear deal. We'll talk about that in April, when the next episode of my personal list comes out. So until you are holding your hat so it doesn't fly away in the wind, in the words, of course, of Roger Grimsby and Bill Butel, hopefully that your news, folks, it will be good news. I thank you very much for joining me. Good luck, be safe, and most importantly, please be well. We're off tomorrow because tomorrow is my dear partner's birthday. And, you know, that's a good reason to celebrate more than ever. So we'll be back on Thursday, one step closer to the weekend. And honey, I'm all excited for your birthday. I got the good balloons and the good cake and all that. Wind is supposed to be picking up the next couple of days as we get ready for a potential rainstorm on Saturday once again. Isn't that nice? Let's talk about that and a lot more too, of course, folks, the next time we get together, which will be on Thursday. Have a good day on Wednesday, everyone. I'll enjoy my wife's birthday, and I'll see you then on Thursday. Have a good one.